Welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half an hour. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org. And you can always tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon.
Hey, Stan, how are you today?
Good. Nice to see you as always.
You too.
Let's start with a question that has come in from one of our listeners. Greg says, I want to know what's going on with 4th Street. Even the parts that are open are like a country back road, he says, and I have to drive that street every day. I have a friend who refuses to take 4th Street. Greg says, my car is not in the best of shape, but 4th Street is certainly not helping. He says, thank you for your response.
So, yeah, as you know, 4th Street is part of our first five-year part of our overall 25-year master plan for water improvements here in the community. So we've been working on that now for several months, along with the work that we're doing on Longloy's Drive, putting in all new water main, the new water tower that's going to be built out by the Weehaw Ridge Elementary School. And then recently you saw the project that's going to be up at Murdoch Park, the underground reservoir and pumping station. That's all part of along with 4th Street, all part of that first phase, $25 million of water infrastructure improvement. So we've been working on 4th Street. Actually, we are right on schedule, even a little bit ahead of schedule, what we told folks. All the new water main has been installed on 4th Street. They're going through now and tying in to all the other mains that go down all the other side streets that tie into the actual homes and businesses. If you've been out there recently, you'll see the sidewalk and the curb crews are in, putting in new sidewalks, putting in new curbs. And then our goal is in the next 2.5 weeks, weather permitting, all the water main work will be finished, all the new curbs and sidewalks will be done. Then we will mill about 1.5 inches off the top of the road, take it down, and then we'll put a new, all new 1.5 inch top coat on it, and then new restripe it. So in about 2.5 weeks, you should be driving on basically a brand new road with new sidewalks, new curbs, and a brand new water main and hookups to serve the people of that community. So we appreciate everybody's patience. We know it's a little bit rough. We don't want to do a lot to it because we'd just be tearing up work to put in the brand new, but we're close. We're in about 2.5 weeks of having most of that project wrapped up.
All right, Greg, thanks for your question. If you have a question for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today, call that in to 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. A couple other infrastructure things to talk to you about. The Indiana Department of Transportation has awarded your city $1 million through its Community Crossings Matching Grant Fund. And you and I have been talking on the program the last couple of months about how construction costs have gone up for your city recently and for plenty of others because there are only so many construction crews, because there are only so many qualified people to do that work. And so they're able, because demand stays the same and supply of workers is not what it could be, to be able to charge a little bit more. And you've had to roll back a little bit on some of the scope of some of the things you wanted to do in the immediate term. So I wanted to ask you, if you get $1 million from the state like this, what does that do for you? What does that $1 million allow you to do that you might not be able to do otherwise?
Well, because it's a matching program, as you know. So we get $1 million from the state and then we match it with $1 million. So it's we're very pleased to have received that. That does allow us to do more. And as you know, we've started the street scan project that we're using some new technology. And so we were able, before we applied for this, we'd gathered some of that data and we're beginning to put, you know, a plan together for the next couple of years. And so this is actually very good timing for us to get that money at this time, because we had identified how we could kind of maximize the use of that on some projects that we hadn't been able to get to, but have a real need and still do some of the others that we want to get done. So we're going to be taking that $1 million and matching it with our million to do Underwood Street. We'll all get repaved from Erie to 15th, a big one that I know a lot of people have been looking forward to, as we will be repaving Old U.S. 231 from US 52 all the way out just slightly past Veterans Memorial Parkway to right there just south of 475 feet south of Veterans, right to the city limits. And so that's
the south side of town.
Yeah, so that's going to get milled, patchwork done, some other techniques that need to be done out there, and then totally repaved. So that's a long, long stretch of road that we're going to be able to get done with that. And so we're excited about that. And then we'll be paving North 19th Street from Hannah down to Underwood Street. And then, again, I'm sure folks that go to the new movie theater and some things, North 36th Street there between Union Street up to where it turns to asphalt. There's a big section that's pavement that is, I'm sorry, that's concrete that's not in good shape. We're going to also totally rebuild that concrete section up to the paving, so the paved section's in good shape. So those are the projects that we identified that we submitted.
So do I understand correctly that you think you can do all of that with what is essentially $2 million, the $1 million from the state and the $1 million you would match it with? That's all doable for $2 million bucks?
We believe that we can do that all for $2.3 million. So $1 million from them, and then about $1.3 million. We only have to match $1 million,
right,
obviously.
Sure.
But we think we can get that with that total with about $2.3 million. So that $1 million will take care of about 50% of that. So that's a lot of work and some things we've really been wanting to get done. The complete package comes out to $2,119,930, and if you put a little contingency in there, you know, 2.3 is kind of what we're thinking. So our city engineer Jeremy Grannard has done a fantastic job with this, and we're thrilled to have got that grant. And as you can see, we're going to put it to very good use and maximize it with our local funds.
Is there a general calculation you have for how much you think $1 million can do these days? In other words, do you look at it and go, $1 million paves this length of road? Do you have that calculation, or is such a thing shifting these days?
I mean, I'm not sure I can tell you that exactly off the top. I can tell you when you have to build a brand new road, I mean brand new, it's about $1 million a mile.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and check with the city engineer. If we're just going to take off an inch and a half and put a top coat back on it, we don't have to do any base and binder. We don't have to do any subgrade work. I mean, there's a lot of variables, right? But brand new, it's about $1 million a mile. But if you just have to take down an inch and a half and then put an inch and a half top coat back on, $1 million will go quite a ways.
One more infrastructure thing. Thank you for bringing me some information that you did before the show today about what's going on with scooters in the community. And you've got some interesting numbers here showing that, as we expected, when the students got back to Greater Lafayette, more than double the number of scooter rides that had been happening were happening. And you're doing something interesting, too. You're piloting this program where you're going to put in a couple of these racks such that the scooters can, of course, sit on their own kickstands. And we've seen, I think everybody by now has seen them sitting on the side of the street or sitting on the sidewalk, or probably, in fact, having fallen over and sat in the midst of pedestrian traffic. So how many of these racks are you ordering, and how are you going to determine whether you think it's been successful?
I think we're going to order four of them, four or six of them we're going to order, and then we're going to put them in some designated locations and just see how they work. I mean, I think they're going to work great, and they're going to reach what we're trying to do. It's a pretty standard piece of equipment, so there's not a whole lot to go wrong with it. But it will put them in a rack, so even if the wind's blowing hard, if somebody walks by and just accidentally touches them, or on purpose touches them, and they all fall over, that happens to us. With the rack, that won't happen, and because they are in some pretty tight spots in downtown, and I provided you with a map of kind of where our locations are, ensuring that they're not blocking the sidewalk, they're not falling over, is really important to us for accessibility and for safety. My guess is these are going to work well, and we'll probably be ordering several more.
They're pretty attractive. They kind of look like the scooters themselves, and so it should be no question to people what is to put there. So hopefully we'll see how those go going forward.
That's a good point.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Your questions can be gotten to him by phone at 496-1999 via email. ask@wbaa.org is the address for that, or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Wanted to ask you about some political stuff. We got word late last night that West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis has canceled what was going to be his only debate appearance against his challenger, Zach Bale. He's going to be attending an event at Purdue instead, we're told. You and Mayor Dennis, of course, have been friends for a long time. You were colleagues on the police force. I wanted to ask you kind of about the optics of this. How do you think it looks, having been a mayor for a long time yourself, having been in conversations about when and how to debate against challengers, and having been the incumbent now for quite a while yourself, how does it look canceling a mayoral debate with less than 2 weeks before it was to happen?
Well, I think, you know, in Mayor Dennis's case, he has a very, very busy schedule, and he is very accessible, I think, to the citizens of West Lafayette, and with the help of WBAA and the show that you guys do, and he is out and around the people. I don't think that people are going to think he's not accessible, or that they haven't had an opportunity to talk to him about issues that they care about or that are important to West Lafayette. And so I think John's done a good job being out around the people. I'm sure Zach would appreciate the chance to debate, and I understand that, but you know, that's a decision that Mayor Dennis has made, and that's his decision to make.
I want to say also that we have a call in to both gentlemen, and we are trying to set up an event where we can see if we can have one or both of them on the air together now that the League of Women Voters debate apparently isn't going to happen, so more on that to come from us. There's also been some shuffling in the Lafayette City Council debate, especially where the at-large seats are concerned. People kind of coming and going and saying yes and then saying no and then saying yes again. Some people not responding at all. Let me ask you to take the kind of 30,000-foot view of it, not just this year, but in recent years as well. Does it seem to you that debates are seen as somewhat less important, perhaps because it is so much easier for, via social media and other things, for candidates to be accessible, like you were just talking about? Have debates lost some of their currency, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think on a local level, because people are so accessible, whether it's through the use of technology or whether it's through just seeing the person at the grocery store, the gas station, or a ball game, or different things like that, the community's still the size where people bump into each other. A lot of times everybody knows where everybody lives and everything else, right? And so I think they probably don't, because of technology and because of that, they don't have that same impact. And I think, you know, here locally in our community, I think elected officials have worked hard to be accessible, to be at a lot of events, to do this shows like this. I'm not sure how long we've been doing this, but it's been several
years.
More
than 5 years now.
Several years, right? So I think, you know, that's a once a month, and I think people feel like they can get to their elected officials. I know I work hard to respond to people that ask me questions or send me emails or stop me out on the street or coming into City Hall, and so I don't know that it has the same impact. And then I and again, you would know this better than I. It's more your bailiwick with how busy people are and all the different activities that they have and their kids have. You know, how many folks actually sit down and watch a debate anymore? I'm sure presidential and stuff like that, because you can't meet the people and it's much harder to see things. I know millions and millions of people watch those, but on a local level, I do think it's a little bit different situation.
In terms of the rules of these debates, one of the things that's been talked a lot about in recent years is this open chair provision, the idea that if you've got one person on one side and one person on the other side running against each other, if either one of those people, be it challenger or incumbent, says they cannot or will not debate, then there are some stipulations, and this is a nationwide League of Women Voters stipulation, that they will not hold the so-called open chair debate where only one person is involved. However, of course, and we pointed this out a year ago when we did a series of stories where we went miniature golfing with some of the candidates, we ended up having to make this decision with respect to the county clerk debate because now county clerk Julie Rausch wasn't available, but her challenger, Vicky Wiesty, was. And so we debated this a lot. We're like, well, what do we do? And we decided that we didn't want to be put in a position where one person could just shut down the entire conversation, because we felt as journalists trying to give as much of that conversation to the public as we could was the right way to go. And so I'm wondering what you make of this idea, and whether we think we should, maybe to get more people to engage with the debates, to rethink it in such a way such that A, more of them will happen, and B, perhaps if you take away this provision, then there is more incentive for both sides to make it a priority because they know that the event is still going to happen with or without them.
Well, I mean, that would be up to the organizations, and I can't speak to what's in individual people's mind, but I'll answer that question in a way what I just think from a personal standpoint. I think that all officials have a responsibility to debate, and if they can work out it, and should be able for everybody to find a time to have at least that one debate. I mean, I don't think that it's right for people to say they won't debate or because they feel they're the incumbent, they don't want to debate because, you know, that's bringing attention to somebody that might not have a lot of name face recognition or have done a lot of things. I don't think that that's proper either. So I think, you know, that every effort should be made to reach an agreeable date and time, and I would hope, you know, people would start early enough. I know they like to condense them down into windows as close to the campaigns as possible. So all parties involved, including those people that are having those debates, might have to be open that it can't always be this narrow window. But I do think it's important that candidates are willing to debate and have those opportunities for the people in the community that we are willing to watch. And so, I mean, that's just kind of my personal thought on it. And that's why, you know, I think a show like this is good. It's not always convenient for me to get here, quite frankly, to do this with everything that I've got going on. But it's a way that I know at least once a month between all the other social media that we're doing. And, you know, the city of Lafayette has about 18,000 followers on our Facebook. And so we're getting a lot of information out. And I talk to a lot of people, but it is another way that I know, all right, well, once a month I'm sitting over there, somebody wants to call in and it's live, you know, so be it. They can call in and we'll answer the question or deal with the situation. And, so I think that is important.
Let's talk about a couple of the people from your party who have announced their candidacies for next year's races. I did an interview last week with Joe Mackey, who is again seeking the 4th Congressional District nomination. He lost out to Toby Beck in 2018. He's a guy who's been in Lafayette for quite a while, worked at Caterpillar, now runs a foundation in the name of his kids. Somebody you've gotten to know at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've known Joe for many, many years. Our kids went to school together, and, you know, unfortunately with the situation, his youngest daughter was in my daughter Sarah's class, and his son Patrick was in my daughter Elena's class at Central Catholic. And so I've known the Mackeys for, I don't know, 20-some years. I mean, a long time. I've got to know Joe, and that's why I was there at his kickoff. He is a great guy. I know he finished third last time, but he is a great person. He cares about what he's doing. He'll tell you what he thinks. He is all over his district at large meetings and small meetings, talking to people and trying to be accessible. And he believes in what he's doing. And he's a good person, and he's my friend. And so I was glad to be there when he did his kickoff. I mean, we all know that's a tough district for a Democrat, and Joe knows that, but he's going to get out there and keep talking about what he believes in. And I just got a lot of respect for his hard work and his perseverance and, you know, being willing to put himself out there like that.
Another Democrat is entering the race to challenge Eric Holcomb next year. Senator Eddie Melton has been going around the state on this listening tour with State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick over the summer. He's probably the biggest of the three Democratic names who are now in the race. What do you know about him? I mean, he's somebody who's been at the State House the last couple of years, was on the State Board of Education before that. Is this a name that particularly local officials like you have become aware of in such a way that it would bolster his campaign? Do you know anything about him?
Well, I mean, I just answer that, you know, honestly, I really don't. I don't know that I've ever met him. I mean, it's possible that I have, but I really don't know much about him and the other candidates at this point. You know, I'm focused right now. Lafayette, we're very blessed with the way that we're growing, and we have lots of projects going on at the park and infrastructure, and we do have some council candidates that have some contested races. So, you know, that's my focus. I've told you many times I'm just kind of a Lafayette guy, and that's where my focus is at.
With respect to a Democrat running for governor next year or running for Congress for this district, what do you, as a Democratic mayor, want to see the people who are the top of your party's ticket next year run on? What issues would most benefit Greater Lafayette, do you think?
Well, I think we always want to continue to look strongly at education. Education is the foundational key when you look at things like economic development, workforce development. Those types of things are incredibly important, so people have opportunities in our community to get an education that will allow them to have a good paying job with benefits and a retirement. And if you can do that, then a lot of other things fall into place. So early childhood education, paying our teachers an appropriate wage and funding our schools properly. You know, on a national level, you know, we have got to get through this immigration debate. There is answers out there. I think most of the country could agree on an immigration policy that addresses border security, but also works with our Dreamers and help people get through the immigration process quicker, that are coming here for the right reasons to be part of this great country and that fabric that makes America what it is. And I think most citizens could come to agreement if we could get Congress to come to an agreement. So, you know, you look at education, workforce development, obviously also as a country, we have to keep our hands around the opioid and the drug crisis and people having access to mental health services. And then again, infrastructure. Infrastructure's never going to go off the table. I don't know how many years we're not able to pass really an infrastructure program in Washington, D.C., but we need roads and we need bridges and we need fiber and we need all those things for technology. We need a comprehensive infrastructure package that continues to move this country forward. But I jump back again to education, education, education. That is such a key in everything we do, from people's quality of life to helping them through difficult issues, having access or the ability to get mental health or to get health care if something does happen. You know, education, paying our teachers. You know, we ask our teachers to take care of our kids 8 hours a day, and they have to be a teacher and a social worker and all kinds of different things with the kids that are coming to school with so many challenges. And I don't know, quite frankly, I don't know how they do it. And they do it for such a minimal amount of money. And we've got to change that. We've got to start treating our teachers and paying our teachers to show how much we value them and the pressure and the responsibility that we put on them. There's a lot of other jobs that pay a lot more that have to do a lot less and have a lot less of the whole country's future riding on that time that they're spending with our children.
Well, that gets to my next question. That, of course, that education model and specifically teacher pay has been something that both Senator Melton and Superintendent McCormick have been talking about. And in fact, even Superintendent McCormick, who shares a party with Governor Holcomb, has taken a few whacks at him about whether he is adequately spending enough time and the state is spending enough money on education, on specifically teacher pay. And this gets at the way that a campaign like that would have to be run, because I've talked to a number of Democrats in the last couple of years since the Holcomb administration has been in office, and really there haven't been a lot of bad things said. I think most people seem to think that it's been pretty effective, that they've stayed away from divisive social issues, that they've been trying to fund things where they can. It seems like any quibbles that have been had, even from Democrats, with the Holcomb administration have been relatively minor. So
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
How does a statewide Democratic campaign run against that? Do they have to find an issue like perhaps education funding that they can just hammer on if you're a Democrat to try to make any headway against a Holcomb administration that I think up until now has been pretty well assumed is going to win re-election?
Yeah, well, and I think Governor Holcomb, for the most part, has done a good job. I would agree with that. I think whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, I hope the state does come together. And I know, you know, they needed to deal with the issue in the Department of Child Services and get that bolstered. But I honestly believe this, that if we fund education properly and we fund teachers properly and we keep teachers teaching and we help keep them motivated and we do that, we can save so much money over time in what we need to put into the Department of Child Services, even what we need to put in workforce development and retraining people or helping people that don't have any job skills get those skills, or people that don't know to go to work on time or to come back from lunch, you know, after they go on lunch, that they don't even have those soft skills. I honestly believe with a strong pre-K education and an education system, you will save more money than you even have to put into that on the back end of that by ensuring that we provide that type of education that leads young people then into whether it's a four-year degree, a two-year degree, certifications, because you don't have to have those degrees, but certain certifications, certain hands-on training. I believe that that is the key, and that's the way to save money on the other end, is by funding it early in a child's life through pre-K and up through K through 12 and then on into higher education.
So your argument is pay for education now, or you have to pay for a whole bunch more stuff later down the line.
Yep.
Real quick, in just our last minute or so, there's been talk about more Chinese tariffs going into place from the Trump administration. You, of course, have investment from Chinese companies like Nanshan in your community. These tariffs are largely being paid by American consumers, so it's going to hurt potentially the workers who work at a Chinese-owned factory in your community. Are you hearing from people who work at companies like that?
Well, it's still relatively quiet. I think people are trying to be, very professional about it. They understand there are things that need to be done, but I can tell you, yes, privately, people, not just in a company like Nanshan, because most of our companies do business with China back and forth or have plants there, that is a strong concern.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time, and we'll do it again next month.
Thank you, Stan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that you can find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. Send questions for any of our mayors to ask@WBAA.org. And listen at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfurt's Chris McBarnes. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.